Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to see that many people interested in this session, Migration to Microservices in Practice. Thank you for joining. My name is Vincent Lesiersen. I'm a software architect working for Exact. Started working there in 2004 at the beginning of our cloud product, Exact Align. Over the years, worked on our system layer in the research department. In the last 2 years, we're actually working on the project to move our cloud product, Exact Align, which is a monolithical application, towards microservices. And in this session, actually, I want to share with you a bit our experiences, our journey that we've taken, and hopefully it will inspire you with your decisions if you're facing similar challenges. There. So what can you expect in this session? I will start off with setting the stage a bit, share a bit with you what is a typical monolithic application, what are the challenges that come with that. Next, I want to talk a bit about, okay, you have this application, what is a strategy to move it towards microservices? From there, actually, I also want to share with you some samples, some practical projects or integrations that we did, and also the type of technology we used, the decision that we've made there. And I want to close off with some takeaways, where you can actually, hopefully, you can do something with your own challenges there. So, a typical monolithic application, how does that look like? If you look at an application like Exact Align, we started beginning 2000. We had the idea, let's bring bookkeeping for customers to the cloud. At that time, it wasn't called cloud, but you can imagine it was like the internet. And we actually launched the product in 2006. And we launched it for our customers in the Netherlands, and soon after we also went to Belgium. And if you look at that today, we actually grow quite a bit. We are now in more than 300,000 businesses worldwide. It's not only bookkeeping anymore, but we're offering an entire ERP suite. And And we are like now, instead of two, we're in seven countries, like the US, the UK, Germany, France, Spain, and Netherlands as a home market. Currently, Exact Align is developed with more than 200 developers in 35 Scrum teams, and we're working on a global basis. So, so from all around the world, developers are working on that same code base, checking in their functionality and bringing them to our customers. And we do this in our main office in Delft, but also in Kuala Lumpur and some smaller teams in Spain, Kiev, and the US. So you can probably see what kind of scale it is. Like I said, it's one big monolithic application. It's a single ASP.NET application running on IIS, and it runs on a couple of machines over there. And I think you can relate it to that with your own application. It's over that large, over the 15 years, you implement a lot of more features. You want to come across with the technology that is available for you, so you're investing Ajax, in REST APIs, making a mobile application out of that. And if it's one single code base, at the moment we end up with more than 4 million lines of code, mainly VB.NET, but also some C# and a bunch of JavaScript. And I think it's typical way of how applications currently look like. But those type of applications come with a couple of challenges. First one, they tend to be difficult to change. Why is change important? Because change is very important because you want to be in front of your competitors, right? It's not that you want to be that the next Uber in ERP cloud software comes along, take away your business, and at the end, you're not there anymore. We see countless of examples in our industry nowadays. You want to come along with technologies like blockchains or IoT. And change is difficult, especially in a monolithic application that long. At least that's something we're experiencing. And that's because you're, over the years, you're introducing a lot of functionality. You implement it with some tight coupling there. And eventually, you're in a situation where every change, especially on horizontal level. So to give an example, if you want to make your product stateless, normally you say, it can cost you a couple of months. Sometimes for us, it took like 2 years. And then you think on yourself, okay, if this is already the time we have to take for those kind of changes, we have to do something about it. You also see it's getting quite difficult to scale. And scale is not only on more customers or bigger machines, but scale is also in the number of developers that is going to run on your applications, the number of countries you want to expand to. And if you have one big application there, scaling can be a challenge. And especially if you operate in the cloud, you're losing, for instance, ability to be elastic there. It's not that during the day you always have the same load towards your service. So you want to be able to change it better, scale better. And we'll also notice is what you notice is that they tend to be difficult to deliver. To ask a question, how many of you deploy their application once a year? No one? Cool. Luckily. who do it once a month? Some more, yes. Who does it once a week? Better? And who does it multiple times a day? Great. Who does deploy it all? I don't know. So, okay, What you want to do, actually, you want to be fast. You want to deliver your functionality quick to your customers, right? Because there's where the action happens. There's where you run into, there's where you have the load. There's where your customers are that are using your product. So you want to be deliver fast. And with this type of big applications, it could tend to be difficult to deliver fast. For instance, we do quite good. We aim to deploy every day. And it turns out in practice it's like 3-4 times a week. And why is that? Because if a developer makes an error, and that happens of course, it's not only that he blocks the deployment, luckily it gets noticed by the regression test, it's not that so when he tends to make that mistake and it gets noticed, it tends to take a while before someone actually see where that bug is and who actually have to solve it. And that's actually, it could take easily a couple of days, and those are the days that other teams cannot deliver their functionality to our customers. So that's something that you really want to do. So for this kind of challenges, we started off with the idea, let's see if we can bring Exact Align to the next level. We chosen to go forward with a microservice architecture because we see some potential in solving those kind of challenges. And how does it look like? This is basically very abstract, of course, what we're trying to do. It's not that we want to do a like-for-like migration. It's not that we take Exact Align, take a couple of years, rebuild it to another architecture, because at those years, you actually have the same, right? you spent only a couple of years and probably your competitors already ahead and you can be out of business. So we want to migrate while improving and more embrace like a mean development type of way. So we want to build the right things right. And how do we do that? We are focusing on the business processes in our software. And those processes, actually, we look at how does the functionality inside the processes actually, how we can decompose that, how can we tear it apart. And that pieces of functionality we take and put it into microservices. And we do that by doing in a learning way. So we test it out first with our customers, see if they actually like this new functionality, and then we start improving over time, and eventually we're going to do more and more of these projects. And those services actually, they run autonomously, so that means that they are built, deployed, they even have their own source repository, and there's just one team that actually manage them. And actually, you want to, and those teams actually, also operate and build them themselves, right? So, and it's not only in it's not something that you solve with technology alone, microservices. It's also your organization. I don't know, who's familiar with Conway's Law? Couple of, nice. Now, Conway's Law actually says that the communication patterns that you have in your system, designed in your system, actually reflects the communication patterns that you have in your organization. So you can imagine you can make very loosely coupled autonomous services, but as your teams aren't that loosely coupled and autonomous as well, they tend to actually depend on each other, and that's something that you don't want in this case. So be aware of that. And while doing that, actually, we want to do this while keeping the shop open, right? It's not that we want to stop development of Xactaline for a couple of years. We want to do that actually. Sometimes we say we do this like changing the tires of a car while driving. And this is maybe a nice example of some guys actually doing that. Looks very complicated. I cannot do that. What's funny to see that they're actually succeeding. And that is something that we want to do as well. Not changing tires, of course, but creating services. So, from this, how does a migration strategy look like? We actually have, if you do architecture, draw a lot of boxes and lines. But the nice thing is to put it inside the code eventually. But in boxes alone, you can make everything work. But what I want to show here is how does a typical migration actually look like for our application? And maybe it can also be in strategy that you can do for yours. So for this, actually, what you see over here is a bunch of components. On the left side, we have the new microserver that we're going to create. And we don't do that like just take something and make it a microservice. We really look like, okay, is this something which we can actually improve on a functional level and see if it actually works out, and while doing that, we move it to a microservice. So we have a domain component. You can think about something like a product catalog where you're actually putting your products in. And to the product catalog, you also have a lot of related components in your monolith application. For instance, you're doing a price list on it, or you're having, when you're doing a web shop, you want to place orders based on those products. And those related components, if you're in luck, then they're actually tied to couple with code, and hopefully with a lot of abstraction around it. In our case, it wasn't that nicely, and it was even decoupled together using the data, querying the same tables. That makes things quite difficult. And But what we actually do in this case, we could just leave that as it is for now. We first want to prove that actually, if we want to improve the product catalog, that that people actually want to have that improved product catalog. So we create a service and do it very easy. Just put it out there to the customers as soon as possible, and we're just leveraging our existing REST APIs, which our app partners, for instance, already are using. We can use them as well. And we validate those assumptions with real customers. But we keep the related components now intact. If we go to the second phase, we actually want to move out all that logic out of our monolith and put it towards a microservice. And we're doing that. You can do the easy way out and say, I take my microservice and tie it directly to our monolith database. But then you're creating a tight coupling again, right? So you want to be smart on this. And what we have chosen to do is actually make our application send out business events, things that are happening on a business level, so not on data level. And we put them in a message bus. And a message bus is really a good structure which allow you to decouple systems, because you can actually, one system can publish events towards the bus, and an X number of other systems can actually subscribe for those events on that bus. And this way, you don't make coupling between those services, but you're actually only making coupling towards your infrastructure, which in this time is your message bus. And from that, actually, we start moving out the logic towards the service. And it's not that you only do that one way. You also need to, from the monolith towards your microservice, you also do it the other way around as well, because those related components still need the data. So if new things are happening inside your microservice, you also want your monolith application to be aware of that. So you're actually doing the same also the other way. And as soon your goal actually will be to move everything over, including the related components. You can choose for making an abstraction in your related components so that it not goes to the original component in your monolith, but making those abstractions are really changes that can actually tend to grow big as well. So yeah, one way forward is not creating those abstractions, but move those components out to microservices as well. And you keep on doing that until you think you're in good shape enough that your application is, or your process or your functionality is completely moved over. How does that look like a bit with projects that we have done? When we started out 2 years ago, we started off with a small team saying, okay, let's see microservices, let's do this. But actually, what are microservices? Where do we start? Right? And there was already a lot of reading around that. We had some experience with SOA architectures. I won't go too deep into that. You need to find out. And as a team, you also want to invest more in the tooling, because we started off with to create just a small service, not business critical in a sense, but we had the idea that we want to create a tool for our POs so that they can ask questions to our customers of pieces of functionality. And for that, we created a feedback service. And it actually was meant to get our team started to actually form an idea about microservices and how we want to migrate them. And we saw it really as an experiment. It also gave us the opportunity to figure a bit what kind of technology you need to actually do that. And so as a team, we started off and say, okay, microservices, what does everyone do with microservices nowadays? Dockers, container. Well, okay, well, let's see if we can use Docker there, right? And it was actually 2 years ago, and at that time, working with containers, getting your application in container was kind of easy. Everyone does that. And we actually, at that time, there wasn't Docker for Windows yet. So you cannot run it on Windows, so you need to go to a Linux stack. Was okay. And then it was like, okay, now we're on Linux. We're a traditional Microsoft company in that sense, so we had a lot of experience on .NET. ASP.NET Core wasn't there yet. It was in pre-alpha stage. And so we're actually chosen to do it in Node.js. And we got the application working quite fast. It was like within a month we've created the application, also run it inside the container. But then the fun really happens, because you have that container sitting there and you want to actually deploy it, right? It's, you want to have real customers or getting load to that. So, and you notice that you need a lot of structures there suddenly as well. You need to be, the containers be discoverable. So you need some service discovery there. You want to monitor them. How do you do that? You're going to have quite some challenges there. And we actually ended up with some technology. We eventually were able to deploy them on Marathon. And we created a bunch of best scripts to create VMs on Azure, to create the cluster and make sure it got orchestrated nicely. But it was, it was a fun way to actually start thinking about, okay, hey, we're going to do microservices. How does that look like in practice? What if we want to have production load real on this? Can it hold? That kind of questions. And eventually we ended up to put a load on it, a real production load, and it all held up quite nicely. And we also learned a bit like, okay, how does it work if we want to release software? At one time we chose a database technology, CouchDB, and it turned out that CouchDB wasn't really handling the queries that we sent to the database to get the questions for a user. So we thought, okay, we now have this nice infrastructure. Potentially we can do A/B testing. Let's put an let's try out if a Mongo works better or MySQL. And we actually make two deployments of them, running them side by side, and we measured actually the throughput of the application. And that's where we saw really the benefits of doing this kind of thinking about this microservice and how you deploy them. Another example is when we continued. We now had an idea what microservices are, but actually we now want to move real data, or actually a real application from Xacto line towards a service. And we started off with the assumption that our customers are used to this grid application in creating sales orders within Xacto line. And the sales order is like the start of a sales process. I want to have something, please take care of it. And comes really, and then it comes to the sales process. It's like the quote to cash. And with the sales order, actually, we thought maybe our customers already used to doing their shopping on bol.com or on Amazon or whatever web shop. We want to make like a web shop experience for them. And we thought, okay, let's start there. That's a nice thing where we think we can add value, and while doing that, move it towards some microservice architecture. What we also saw is like, yeah, now we're going to handle real customer data, and we really want a good production environment doing that for us. And yeah, we just started with all the Docker thing, and at that time, there weren't that great tools around to really ease the pain a bit. So we thought, okay, let's start simple. Let's get the service out there as possible in the simplest way, and we just create an Azure web app. And with that Azure web app, we already had the nice tooling that Microsoft provides us, in Visual Studio for the developers. We can do debugging inside of them if we want to do. And we hooked them up to an Azure Storage account, and we pushed out that functionality as soon as possible to our customers. And then actually, yeah, the fun happens. And the fun is that you notice, for instance, as soon as you want to put a message bus underneath that, and you're going to talk asynchronously and in messages, it could be that two bugs or two other sort of events, suddenly messages ended up in your dead letter, or you lose them at all. That's something that you don't want to do, right? And actually, what is worse, you want to know that it's happening. So you think, okay, I really need something like monitoring to have that in place. So again, we thought, okay, what can Azure provide us already out of the box there? And we saw a product called Application Insights. Was easy, just a couple of NuGet packages, simple configuration, hook it up to the endpoint, and bam, we had monitoring. We can measure things like things are going wrong there. We can add additional telemetry there to do some other things. And actually, a colleague came up to the idea to, hey, we can make all those events there. Let's use them for something useful. Let's see if our users actually using the application as we expect they should use them. So we started to create a dashboard, and we can actually see in this dashboard what is happening and how our users actually using our application. So it gave us really good insights in how we can do. How we can do so we can actually solve the problems fairly easily. And as soon as you go to other challenges that you get there, especially like when you're sending out events, it's like, okay, what's the event? What should be in there? If you are not rich enough inside your event, you need to create the data from other services. It will take more time. You gain more dependencies towards those services. So yeah, it's really something you want to figure out, like, okay, how big is my event? What kind of data is in there? For example, if you have a sales order, you want to put as much information around this order in that event so that the microservice can take it and do all the business logic with that one event and don't have to go to services that often. So, the next step actually that we now in the midst of taking is, we can create services now. And of course, there are a lot of things to figure out still yet, but now more and more teams are actually going to do that, selecting pieces of functionality of exact, maybe even new functionality, and make a microservice out of that. And then you see actually that web apps for us doesn't really cut it anymore. We need to evolve in a piece of infrastructure that can serve us better and make it more standardized in a way that not every team creates its own app and figure out their own way to deploying that. And yeah, we believe like in technology like Service Fabric or Azure Container Service can really bring that to us. With Service Fabric, you actually see your platform where you run your microservices on really as a piece of infrastructure. Like you have the cattle versus pets. So like you don't configure just like something. Yeah, you see your infrastructure is one big set of compute where you want to put your microservice on. And Service Fabric can actually deliver that to us. And actually, also Azure Container Service, if you put it inside a container and run it on a DCOS cluster, you practically have the same thing. But it gets kind of interesting nowadays when Service Fabric also allows you to run Docker containers. So then you can actually have the nice platform PaaS type solution as Service Fabric provides off to create microservices together with that nice experience that we have with Docker and to run maybe even other workloads than other technologies that we want to embed with our services. So where are we? We have to say we're right on track. We're just at the beginning. We have migrated a bunch of services already, really testing them out with customers, see if they actually like them. And they're all independent, and they have separate deployment pipelines, separate repositories, separate teams maintaining them. And with this separation, it also creates an interesting challenge as well, because if one team decides to go off with all in with technologies like when they want to go off with Go and they have deployment pipeline on Jenkins, the other one uses TFS, you get a really scattered organization in this sense. And the biggest problem is there is that you don't learn from each other because everyone does something different. So even autonomy comes with a price, and I think if you're going to do that on big scale, you need to facilitate some sort of infrastructure or a layer there where actually teams are free to experiment, but have a standardized way of putting the microservices there. And things that we are looking into is like internal open source. Can we somehow the components that one team makes share with other teams, and actually that the other teams learn from it and even can contribute to that? So that are like interesting concepts that comes to play as well. So actually we want to do we want to amplify the learning there so that not everyone do this from themselves. But what we see now, it's easy to change. To give you an example, I've already given, is that we can actually test if Mongo performs better than MySQL with real production data. And it was easy to put another database technology underneath it. Recently, we changed our user interface from Angular towards React. We did it with 3 people in 2 weeks. Normally, if you do that with the total of Exactline, and I think it will take with everyone 2 to 3 years. So the changing part is really something that's really improved over there. Next to that, we see it's better to scale. Every service is small enough that they can scale on their own. We can make choices like, hey, the sales order, that's something that people are using during the day. We don't need that much of instances there. But for instance, VAT returns, it's something that you're to do once in the 3 months. Yeah, that's only the time where you're going to have that load, right? So, by just scaling up your instances at that time actually can save you a lot. You don't have to have everything there that stand by. And it can also scale in teams. We got teams that can start with it quite easy. They don't have to go to an onboarding course that takes like weeks to get the system layer to know or stuff like that. They can leverage the knowledge that they have and they can start building services and solve real problems for our customers. And we also see faster delivery cycles. When we did the feedback service once, we did 60 deployments a day. Of course, you can ask why you need 60 deployments. That's a different story. But at least it gave us the possibility to do that. We can now think about A/B testing and see not talking features, but in experiments and test it out really at the customers. So those are really the things that they really improve. So actually, we now want to give you some takeaways for you if you are doing that as well. One of the things that we see, start with continuous delivery. It really is an important part. It's almost like a prerequisite for going into microservices. And that's because you're going to operate with a lot of services, with a lot of teams on scale, and you want to move them towards your customers as soon as possible. And you want to do that automated. And continuous delivery is really the way in doing that. And yeah, as you can see on the picture, the DevStar version 2 was a lot better than version 1, although they still managed to blow it up in the end. But at least they know it without completing the whole thing. Another one is treat your monolith as one big microservice. Sounds a bit strange, right? Like, you have the big applications, not really microservices. But actually, the micro is the one that throws you off. And if you follow the same principles for your micro, for your monolith, as you do for your microservices, like continuous delivery, putting a REST API on it, talk with asynchronous messaging, you can see it becomes quite easy to make those changes. And it's really something to look into, and maybe even containerize your monolith so that you can actually practice almost the same things that you're doing for your microservice, right? So you can actually be fast in changing there as well. You don't want to end up with a monolith that your microservice can do 60 deployments a day, but you have to wait a year until your next deployment of your monolith is scheduled. Another one, start simple, adopt technologies to solve real problems. Sounds easy, but yeah, there's no way of going, there's no waterfall in going into microservices like colleague Luke told me lately. Do it agile, be smart, start very simple, validate your assumptions with your customers. If you need monitoring, look at monitoring and at the place that you need it. Don't design a big architecture and a framework up front to put servers on top of that. Because yeah, it could be that things are changing. And one last thing I want to say here is like, think of microservices not really as the silver bullet. It's a great way of decomposing your application. It really is. It gives you a lot of possibilities in terms of deployment, changing, autonomous teams, everything there. But be aware of that you're moving the complexity that you first had in your application with the tight coupling, all the components that are built together. Be aware that you're moving that towards your infrastructure. You need to think about more on monitoring than ever. You need to know that you're sending out messages, how many messages you sent, who are handling those messages. You need to make services be able to discover themselves. Where is my service living? Because if you're using Docker in a cluster, yeah, it could be that 1 second is on that node and the other second is on the other node. Those things are happening when you do that. So, yeah, microservices are really great, but be aware, a monolith is easier to do that. But if you're doing it right, then you actually gain a lot of it. And you see now the technology is really maturing on this. You get now products like Service Fabric that can do health reporting, that can do monitoring, that could do service discovery for you. It has a rolling update model, stuff that you don't have to cater for yourself anymore. So technology is really improving, and I think over the coming years we can make it even easier for you to get started. And actually with that, I would like to thank you. Please feel free to contact me. I'm over at the Expert Lounge to answer questions, or if you want to have some discussions, you can find me there. And I want to wish you a pleasant